We're going to get back to that opening hymn now. Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. It's a favorite of mine. I love its melody and most of the message, some of the message as it appears in the original version, and all of the message as it appears in the UU version. In all our wisdom, you know, Unitarian Universalists have revised those words. Some of the changes really are improvements and fit better with UU values, and some will. I miss them, and I'll tell you what I miss. For instance, the original first verse reads, "Come thou fount of every blessing, tune my heart to my heart, not my ears, right? Tune my heart to sing thy grace. Streams of mercy, never ceasing, call for songs of loudest praise. Teach me some melodious sonnet, sung by flaming tongues above. Praise the mount, I'm fixed upon it, mount of God's redeeming love." And I'll admit that the line that I miss is, "Teach me some melodious sonnet." It is so beautifully poetic to me. The flaming tongues part is a whole theological rabbit hole that we're not going down today. I came to love this hymn as a young adult. I was 19 or 20 years old while working at a summer camp for girls. The camp manager, Leland Bingham, had recently graduated from seminary. He brought his family to live among the trees and trails and stones of Camp Mundo Vista. He took care of the grounds, the pool, the bathhouses. But more than that, he ministered to us, the staff. One summer during Vesper service for our 50-person staff, Leland reflected on Come Thou Fount, especially the original second verse. "Here I raise mine Ebenezer, hither by thy help I'm come, and I hope by thy good measure, pleasure safely to arrive at home." Now, when I say Ebenezer, what comes to mind? Yeah, that's not it. So here's the backstory. In 1 Samuel, the people of Israel had turned away from God and were worshiping foreign gods. They were at war with the Philistines again. Both of these things happened quite a lot, fighting with the Philistines and turning away from God. It's a whole thing. This time, the Philistines, though, had taken the Ark of the Covenant in battle. Now, who remembers your Raiders of the Lost Ark? What's the Ark of the Covenant? It carries the Ten Commandments, right. So the prophet Samuel tells the Israelites that what they have to do is return to God, which they do. But they decide they're going to get together and pray, and the Philistines get word of this, and they see an opportunity to attack. And so the Israelites plead for help, and Scripture says, "The Lord spoke with a mighty voice of thunder from heaven that day, and the Philistines were thrown into such confusion that the Israelites defeated them." After the victory, Samuel takes a stone, sets it upright, and names the stone Ebenezer, which in Hebrew means stone of help. And it comes from two Hebrew words, which I know that Tamar probably knows how to pronounce. Okay, there you go. And it's two words that mean stone of help. And here is what it's Samuel says, "Thus far the Lord has helped us." And maybe I should read it, "Thus far the Lord has helped us," because you never know, right? So when the Israelites saw that stone, they were reminded that they hadn't made it through that on their own. Their survival, their freedom, their restoration had come from with divine help. During that camp Vespers, Leland gave each of us a stone that he had gathered from that mountain. "Let this be your reminder of Ebenezer," he said, "a reminder that God is your help." And here is mine that he gave to me. Mine Ebenezer. I've kept it for over 40 years and moved it from the Outer Banks to San Diego and back here to Virginia. It started as a reminder that God, with my theology at the time, and Leland, was there for me. Over time, it's come to mean something more. A reminder to be that stone of help, to hold one another up, and more importantly, to know that how anything that I do is not done alone. Nothing I do is done on my own. That idea fits beautifully with Unitarian Universalist theology, and it's probably why I'm there, because of Unitarian Universalism. Sacred language with a shift from God alone as the stone of help toward an interdependent community of love. So I wonder first, how does that feel in your body right now to think of God being your Ebenezer, your stone of help? How does that resonate? Does it bring a sigh of relief? Is it something you would hold on to? One of the campus ministry students animatedly said to me once, I want there to be a God. I need there to be a God. I want to know that there's something bigger than me. I want to know that I am not in charge. So maybe it's a relief to you to have a larger presence, a higher power. It's really important. And maybe for others of you, when the idea of God as your only stone of help comes up, it doesn't quite land. Maybe it raises questions or you feel resistance. Maybe it feels too abstract or too far from your own lived experience. And that's important too. Because for some of us, our Ebenezers aren't carved by divine hands. They're shaped by the people around us. The hands that held us, the words that steadied us, the moments of grace and connection that carried us through. Sometimes it's both and. What are your Ebenezers? What are the symbols of your spiritual journey? Your symbols of resilience, your symbols of community memory, your symbols of when you have turned back toward your true north, toward what you know is true for you. What are the symbols of your stones of help? These kinds of markers can guide us even when the present path is unclear, as it can so often feel these days. Every time the Israelites saw the stone, that marker named Ebenezer, they remembered. So I ask, what are the symbols, the objects, the songs, the stories that help you remember that we are not alone on this path and that we have come this far together? In these days when so much feels uncertain, divided, even fragile, when the din is so loud it's confusing, when it feels the tables have been turned and what's up should be down and what's down should be up, or what should be up is down and what should be down is up, it matters what we believe. It matters. It matters what we believe, and it matters how we say it. Words matter. That's why this exploration of sacred language matters. Even words that feel dusty or outdated, like Ebenezer, may still carry truth if we take the time to translate them into our own experience. Maybe it's because of the association with Scrooge, but the term Ebenezer definitely feels a little old to me. And reclaiming that the language or translating it into what's true for us today can build bridges of belonging rather than walls of confusion. So here's where I'll put in the plug for the class that's coming up in October, Sacred Language, Sacred Translation. We'll be exploring words and pondering what it means to us now and how they fit into our belief system. It matters what we believe and that we know what that is, especially now. It matters because words shape our thoughts. And our thoughts shape our beliefs. And that shapes our attitudes, and that shapes our actions. Words matter. You know that saying, everything old is new again? Well, even as we try to reclaim or translate sacred language for today, sometimes we find that the words we need were already spoken by someone in our tradition, too often overlooked. In 1857, Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, a Unitarian and fierce abolitionist, poet, and essayist, wrote of Christianity in deeply liberative terms. Not as something cold or dogmatic, but as a presence that breaks chains, that raises people from dust and reminds them of their dignity and worth, their kindred with angels and alliance to God. Does it sound familiar, the inherent worth and dignity? Many of us grew into this Unitarian Universalist faith hearing that phrase, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. It's long been one of the most cherished parts of our UU principles. It echoes the Enlightenment language of Kant, yes, but here in Harper's writing is something even more radical. She claims this not as a philosophical abstraction, but as a religious truth, a spiritual knowing. And she says it not in a vacuum, but in a world where chains, literal chains, in the 1860s, were still being broken. For Harper, the sacred was not vague. It was specific, embodied, urgent. Dignity and worth were not just given by God or by grace, but they had to be claimed, lived, and defended, especially by those who had been told they were otherwise. Years later, in a poem where she takes on the voice of religion itself, Harper wrote, in the book that Anne showed, Forest Trees, my name and my nature is love. My name and my nature is love. What if, right? Today, in our evolving Unitarian Universalist faith, our Article 2 values proclaim that love is the central ethic, not just a value among the others, but the through line that gives all our commitments meaning. Love at the center, we say. And Harper had already said that long before our modern attempts at inclusive language, long before the gray hymnal, long before the Article 2 study commissions or carefully worded revisions. She spoke it in a time of war and injustice, when love had to be fierce, political, and real. Our love right now has to be the same, fierce, political, and real. That's the heart of sacred language, not just to be spoken, but to be lived, not just to comfort, but to liberate. Frances Ellen Watkins Harper reminds us that even when the official record doesn't always make space for you, your voice can still shape the soul of a movement. So we come back again to the hymn, back to that line, here I raise mine Ebenezer, hither by thy help I'm come. It's not just poetic, it's true. We made it this far, not alone, but with help. We may think we do all the things on our own, but we really, really don't. We've come this far because we had help. Divine help, communal care, ancestral knowledge, internal wisdom, whatever it is for you, all of the above, we do not do it alone. We belong to one another. I found that the old sacred language often preserves this sense of interdependence more than what our focus on our modern individualism can obscure. Whether we believe in God, in grace, or simply the strength of our human connections, this line invites gratitude and mutual care. I am because you are. When we say, I've come this far by help, we open the door for others to do the same and to find a home in shared vulnerability. We belong to one another. And here's the good news. Even though many sacred texts, hymns, and traditions come from contexts very different than ours, they're not closed to us. Through the act of sacred translation, linguistic, emotional, spiritual, we can bridge the gap between old language and living meaning. Sacred language becomes a tool when we don't just preserve it, but interpret it with love and openness, and when we challenge it, and when we translate it into our present-day lives and our own spiritual growth. Ebenezer is not just a stone in a field. It's your sobriety chip, your justice banner, your pronouns badge, your Black Lives Matter button, your photo from the first pride you ever attended, a stone given in a service, a packet of seeds received that you planted for a remembrance, a photo of all the letters you wrote to get out the boat. It's any symbol of having made it this far with help. What would it mean to build a community where everyone's sacred language, however ancient, evolving, modern, traditional, doubting, or deeply devout, is welcome and heard? We don't have to discard sacred words. We can reclaim them, translate them, live them, in lives of compassion and authenticity, so that the circle of belonging grows wider, not narrower. May you raise your Ebenezer in gratitude for how far you've come, and may you help others find their stone so that no one walks the journey alone.